We're in Mark still this morning, Mark chapter 6. I think we will go through March, and then we'll be done for a while with Mark, maybe a little bit into April, and then we're going to take a break in Mark. I want to begin with this idea that absolute power corrupts absolutely. You've probably all heard this phrase before. I have to remember to stay in this spot. I don't have the little mic this time. I have to stay here. I just wanted to move. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. We understand this, right? You get, and this happens in a number of ways. You can think about the power that comes from money. How many people get super rich? They win the lottery, or they get a better job, or they have an inheritance, and then suddenly they're jerks to everyone because now I don't need you anymore. I have my own money. Or you can think about how this happens with politicians or world leaders throughout history. You can think of countless examples of people who, when they got into power, they became despots or tyrants or despicable people. You could think about this in just regular social dynamics, right? Somebody is put in charge of you at work over a project, perhaps, and you know they interacted with you one way before, but now they're your boss or they're in charge of this particular project, and now they don't treat you quite as nice. We understand what power does, and the Romans would have been familiar with this too. Mark is a story of action, is it not? He skips a lot of the other stuff the writers include, a lot of things in the Gospels that Mark just doesn't talk about, in favor of quick movement, one story to the other, boom, 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 these are the stories, these are the things that happened. And he cuts out a lot of various details. I hesitate to say he cuts out doctrine, but he does. He cuts out a lot of the things that Jesus taught in favor of the action. Now, in a sermon series such as we've been doing, this can lead to some repetitiveness, can it not? I understand that. At a certain point, right, all the stories have the same basic point, that Jesus did a miracle and he's great, hooray for Jesus. But, so this is in this particular part of Mark, we're going to be done in a minute, or not in a minute, in a month, we will be done with Mark. In this particular set of stories, this is the last one of Jesus does a miracle of the stories that we'll cover. We're getting into more doctrine next week. And Mark seems interested, that's a typo, in conveying one basic idea, right? Jesus is powerful. That's the point of all these miracles. He does all these amazing things because he's awesome and he's powerful and he's deity, right? He is God in the flesh. That seems to be what Mark is most trying to convey with all of these stories of these miracles. And why he goes from story to story to story to story to story so quickly is he's trying to build up in the mind of the reader, oh man, this Jesus is amazing, right? He is God. He is powerful. But at the same time, what is he trying to do here? He's trying to inspire allegiance. But the Roman readers, the readers who I think Mark is writing to, they would have been familiar with the idea that power corrupts. The emperors were not known for justice. And especially as we go into the latter parts of the New Testament, as we get into the later decades of the first century, we have a series of Roman emperors, Caesars, who were to various levels corrupt, quite corrupt in the case of some of them, who twisted power, took the power that they had, and used it to either persecute Christians or to enact very selfish, self-aggrandizing laws. One of them even wanted to be a deity, wanted to be worshipped as a deity. So the Romans knew what power does to people. And like all systems of governance, the bureaucracy of Rome was rife with corruption. We see it in the end of Acts when Paul is put in prison and he has to stay 2 years in Caesarea. And we're told that the governor kept waiting for Paul to give him a bribe for 2 years. He kept bringing Paul before himself and letting him make his case, and the text says that he was just waiting for Paul to give him money so he could let him go. We know, of course, Paul didn't do that, but the Romans knew, and I think the Jews knew this as well, right? You see it in the Pharisees. The people who were supposed to be the leaders in Israel, yet when they were in power, they twisted the scriptures. We'll see this in the next sermon next week when we talk about the traditions of the Pharisees, how they twisted that into something that was self-serving, something that wasn't for the benefit of the people. And so along the way, as Mark is telling these stories of Jesus' power, Jesus is amazing. He can do this thing. He can do this thing. He can do this thing. He colors these stories with details of great compassion, because that is the thing that will inspire loyalty. It's not just the power. It's not just his ability. But what is he doing with that power? Why is he exercising this power? So, three stories this morning in Mark chapter 6. The first one, the feeding of the 5,000. This was what was read for us, Mark 6, 30 through 34. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him that all they had done and taught. This is after he had sent them out, right? Then he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Why? Why were they tired? They'd just been doing all of these amazing things. He had sent them out on their own to teach and to preach and to cast out demons and to heal, and they were coming back, and they needed rest. We understand that, right? They had just been doing these journeys or these teachings, these travelings, and Jesus says, right, come and rest a while. But what happens instead? Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. He literally just got done telling them, we all need to rest. We're all exhausted. Let's go rest for a bit. But then this need presents itself. This situation arises. He sees all these people, and he has compassion. This is perhaps, I think I've said this before, my favorite Greek word, splangitzomai, because it's so fun to say, to be moved in the bowels, right? That feeling of compassion, that he sees their need. And note, the need was not for food yet at this point. He's going to feed them eventually. But he's not moved by their need for food right here. What is he moved by? They need guidance. They need leadership. They need teaching. Now, we keep reading in the story. He answered them. So we skipped over a few verses. They come and he teaches them for a while, and then they start to get hungry because they've been there a while. And so he tells the disciples, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? And what's the point of the question? That's impossible. We don't have that much money. We can't go do that. That'd be crazy. And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. Then they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. He commanded them to sit down in groups on the grass, and they sat down in groups by hundreds and fifties, and taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. This story, compassion and power. Right? Isn't that what he's demonstrating in this story? He's teaching them. He's doing these things. He had compassion because they needed teaching. They needed guidance. So he's teaching them. And then the time draws near for dinner and everybody needs to eat. And they say, let's just send them away. And I've often wondered to myself, why would he tell them to give the people food? He knows they don't have food. He knows that the apostles can't do this. But what is he demonstrating to his disciples? Stop thinking about things in this limited way. Have compassion on them. Now, Jesus, of course, knows what he's going to do, but I think he's trying to teach the apostles, trying to get through to them, because as we'll see in a minute, they had some difficulty understanding. The walking on the sea. Now, this story is in multiple Gospels. Mark's is by far the shortest account of this, and I have in the guided devotional, if you have that in the bulletin, one of the other accounts that has more details about this. Mark's is pretty brief. After the feeding of the 5,000, verse 46, after he'd taken leave of them, he went on the mountain to pray. When evening came, the boat was on the sea, and he was alone on the land, and he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the 4th watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea and thought he was a ghost, and they cried out, for they all saw him and they were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, as I, do not be afraid. And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased. Now, other accounts, there's the word, of this story, and the other Gospels include a bit with Mark. But the interesting part of this, why was he going to walk by them? Now, the way that we kind of frame this, We have the water down here, and he's up on the land, right? He's up on the mountain. He's up on a higher place to pray. So he's looking down, and he can see what's going on in the water, and he sees that they're making headway painfully, and then he decides to go to them. We understand that, right? Oh, I got to go help my friends, maybe, is what he's thinking. I don't know. We have to sort of make some implications here. But then the text says he meant to pass by. Now, maybe he got on the water, and he sees, oh, they're fine. I don't need to go to them. I just wanted to be here in case they needed me. I don't know. It's interesting to see what's going on in Jesus' head here. He meant to pass them by. But then, of course, they see him and they're terrified because it's a ghost, because they wouldn't, I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine you would assume that that was Jesus, right? There's no way you would just assume, oh yeah, that must be Jesus over there on the water. No, they think it's a ghost, or they think some apparition. Oh no, what's going to happen? They think they're going to be taken by this ghost, or they're already struggling with the storm, right? But I don't know, there's a lot of terror here, and I think it's their terror, right, that convinces him, I should go comfort them. I should go help them. I was just going to walk by you, and I think why he comes down off the mountain in the first place is they're making headway painfully. I should go see what's going on down there. Sees them, they're going to be okay, perhaps he thinks, and he thinks, well, I'm just going to go by, and then they're terrified, so, oh, okay, I'll go help. This story, the way that Mark records it is so interesting. The details that he chooses to include and the details that he chooses to leave out, this is a story of comfort, right? A story of help, a story of Jesus who was alone praying by himself, recharging, doing what he told the apostles to do, right? Come away and rest for a bit. That's what Jesus is doing. And then he sees their difficulty, sees their struggle, and he helps them. Finally, the third story in Mark 6, 53 through 56. When they had crossed over, they came to land at Gennesaret and moored on the shore. And when they got out of the boat, the people immediately recognized him and ran about the whole region and began to bring sick people on their beds to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he came, in villages, cities, or countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and implored him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment, and as many as touched it were made well. Again, two points to this story. The power of Jesus, the healing power of Jesus, and that last detail is the power, right? Just even the fringe of his garment. Not like him, right? He's not laying his hand. It'd be like if they touched this little baggy part of my pant right here. Isn't that what it would be? Just let me graze your pant leg. And as many as touched it were made well. That's how much power Jesus had in his healing of people. But I think we see a second thing too, that Jesus makes time for people over and over and over wherever he goes. He's making time, he's healing, he's helping, he's doing what he can as he goes and teaches and preaches. And again, I want to really hone in on this thing in the story of the 5,000, that when he saw them, he had compassion. Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd, because power corrupts. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin, and the teachers of the law should have been their shepherd. Should have been helping the sick. Should have been helping the people. They were not, and so Jesus came to do what they had failed to do. Now, the early part of Mark's gospel, as we've read up to this point, is mostly just a list of miracles. Not all, but mostly just a list of miracles. That's all Mark's gospel is up to this point. Yet there is a point to it, right? 1:40 through 41, a leper came to him, imploring him and kneeling to him and said, "If you will, you can make me clean." And moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said, "I will be clean." 6:34, when he went ashore and saw a great crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. 8:1-2, in those days when again a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples and said to them, "I have compassion on the crowd, because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat." In these three instances, we haven't gone through eight yet, but we'll get to it eventually. In these three instances in the early part of Mark, we see that he was compassionate to teach, compassionate to heal, and compassionate to clean. Now, this idea of being clean here in 140 and 41, I think we understand that to be physical in this particular case, this leper who needed to be cleansed of this leprosy, but I think we see the compassion in a greater scheme in his willingness to cleanse us of our sins, right? To cleanse us of that thing which separates us from God, as leprosy would have separated a person from society. So what is Mark trying to do? He's trying to convince people there is a better person to serve. There is a better person to give your allegiance to. Somebody who's better than the emperor and better than Caesar and better than the governor and better than the Pharisees and better than your parents and better than whoever. There is a better person to serve. One that has the power to help in any circumstance. Because he's listed a billion miracles. A billion is an exaggeration. He's listed a dozen miracles to this point. Whatever it is that your difficulty is, Jesus can help with that. He is powerful enough to do so, but also one that has the people's best interest at heart, that is not about power for power's sake. Isn't that how people treat power? That power is for me. It is for me, the one who has power to do with what I want, to do what is for best for me. But Jesus is shown to be one who has power for the benefit of others and not just himself. A leader that cares and has compassion for the downtrodden. This is a common narrative. It is a common narrative in human politics, in human stories. Yet in the story of the gospel, it should be one that softens our heart and inspires allegiance. Yet the followers of Jesus are often so full of hard hearts, as we see in Mark 6, 51 through 52, the end of the walking on the water. He got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves. But their hearts were hardened. What did they not understand? Did they not understand the miracle? The loaves. You think about the loaves. Surely they understood that something supernatural had happened, right? I mean, they've only had 5 loaves and 2 fish. Surely they understood that if Jesus fed everybody, they had to have understood that a miracle took place. They had to have understood that some power was on display. I think more they didn't understand the reason. The compassion. I don't know, maybe they did misunderstand the miracle itself, but their hard hearts prevented understanding and acceptance of Jesus. Why they were utterly astounded when he gets into the boat and the wind ceases, right? He's walking on the water. Maybe they should have immediately assumed, oh, I see somebody out on the water. That's probably Jesus. Maybe that should have been their assumption because they saw him literally create food out of nothing. They saw him heal the sick. They saw him demonstrate power after power after power, and yet their hearts were hardened and they did not understand. And I'm worried that we have hard hearts. That we know the power of Jesus, we know the compassion of Jesus, we know his great ability to help in any circumstance we have, and we refuse to understand his great and awesome mercy. We refuse to understand why he did the things that he did. It was not for his own benefit, but for the benefit of others, and how that would manifest in our lives, right? Power is only as beneficial as the will to use it righteously. Yet we, if we have hard hearts, if we are not willing to accept what Jesus taught and did, we will then use our power for our own benefit. Not that you have the miraculous power, not that you have the power to heal or to raise the dead or to walk on water, but your power at work, your power in your homes, your power that comes from your money, that you will not take the example of Jesus, who used that power with compassion to help other people. That is the danger in the hardness of our hearts. That we will not understand, not just the things that Jesus did, but not understand why he did them. And so Mark, as we've come through a lot of the book of Mark up to this point, next week we're going to switch into a more of a doctrinal stance instead of just the stories of Jesus, but some things that Jesus taught. As we've read story after story of Jesus, what's the point? Is Jesus worthy of your allegiance? Yeah, he is. Is he worthy of your loyalty? Yeah. Why? Because he's the Son of God, because he has all power, all authority has been given to him in heaven and earth, and because he has your best interest at heart. He's not like a regular politician. He's not like a regular ruler. He's not like us. He gives us a better example to follow, one that is based in compassion and seeing the needs of others and using what power we have, not miraculous power, but the power that we have, the ability to influence the world, using our power to benefit and help and serve others. Isn't that what we're seeing in the life of Jesus? The invitation is simple. Jesus has power to heal. He has power to raise the dead. He has power to walk on the water. He has power to forgive. Maybe you're here today and you have not been forgiven. Jesus has the power to forgive and the compassion to do so, as he demonstrated when he died on the cross for your sins, when he took on the sins of the world. He wants to use that power to bless you if you will turn to him and come to him and submit to his will.